And the minute he does that, God allows Satan to provide more suffering and pain. And Job's body is seized with sore boils from the soles of his feet to the top of his head. And his skin is darkened and shriveled. And his sores become infected with worms. His eyes grow red and swollen. And he has high fevers and chills. And his body is racked with pain. And there's sleeplessness and delirium and choking fill his days. And his sickness just emaciates his entire body. Just think of that. On top of losing everything, then there's this. Truly, if it's not one thing, it's another for Job. And he has to move outside the city walls to the garbage dump, the home for the city's outcasts. And there he sat alone, isolated, and mourning his terrible, lonely fate. And then even his marriage is torn asunder. After 10 funerals and a husband that's hopelessly ill, Mrs. Job has had enough. Her recommendation to Job is, "Are you still holding on to your integrity? Why don't you curse God and die?" She says to him. That's her advice. And Job said, "You're talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble and hardship and difficulty?" And what makes this story so bewildering is the undeserved nature of Job's suffering. You know, Job was innocent. There's no connection between his sin and the amount of pain that he's experiencing. There's no connection. It seems terribly unfair. Where is the love and goodness of God who would do this to Job? Where's God? You know, you think about that amazing loss in his life, and how do we respond to loss, and how do we respond to those hard things that come in our lives? And sometimes that differs from family to family, from culture to culture. Sometimes our families of origin have different ways of expressing emotions related to the loss that shapes us. Our culture also plays a role, whether it's Native American or Latino or Chinese or Arab or African, Jewish, Eastern European or Caucasian. You know, one extreme, probably, is the Americans of British ancestry who tend to value no muss, no fuss. A rationale of explaining loss. And funerals, for example, are practical and pragmatic. As one sister said, explaining why she had not attended the funeral of her twin sister, what would be the point of spending money on airfare to get there? She's already dead. Very pragmatic. Very practical. On the other extreme are nationalities where it seems like time stops. In places like Italy and Greece, where traditionally women have worn black the rest of their lives after their husband's death. And sometimes, as one person describes it in Italian-American funerals, family members might bang on the coffin with their fists, crying out the dead person's name, or even jumping into the grave as the coffin is lowered into the ground. Very different from a more stoic way. Interestingly, Queen Victoria of England lost her husband Albert when she was 42. And she was obsessed that nothing would change, and so she continued to make Albert the center of her life, even though he had died. And so for years she slept with his nightshirt in her arms. She made his room a sacred place to be kept exactly as it was when he was alive. And every day for the rest of her life she had the linens changed, his clothes laid out fresh, and water prepared for his shaving. And on every bed in which she slept, she attached a photograph of Albert as he lay dead. They took a picture. You know, in our culture, addictions become the most common way to deal with pain. We watch television incessantly. We keep busy running from one activity to another. We work 70 hours a week. We indulge in pornography. We overeat. We drink. We take pills. Anything to help us avoid pain. And some of us demand that someone or something, like a marriage or a sexual partner or an ideal family or children or an achievement, a career or a church, take away our loneliness. But sadly, the result of denying and minimizing our pain and wounds over the years is that we become less and less human. We become empty Christian shells with painted smiley faces. You know, Madeline had a picture of two faces in the children's message, and sometimes in Christianity we were taught that we're only to have the smiley face. No matter what's going on in our life, whether there's a storm that hits in Florida, or whether there's pain here, or we lose someone, or someone has cancer, we're always to have that smiley face. And when we do that, we become less and less human. And sometimes we can feel guilty for not rejoicing in the Lord always. And coming before Him with joyful songs, we feel guilty when we cry and we have hurt and pain in our lives. And yet that's reality. That's real. And when we do that, we become small-souled people when there's always a smile on their face. I always have a tendency to call it happy-clappy faith, where everything is always happy-clappy. And life just is not that way. And sometimes we can feel guilty when we have pain. And so we live in denial. When somebody asks, how are you doing? We say, I'm fine. I'm fine. After all, God is good. I walk away from the pain. I don't think about it. Everything's good. No tears. Now, granted, you know, when there's something really catastrophic happens in our lives and we lose a loved one, there's that time period of shock where shock is a good thing. It helps. It's God's anesthetic at the time of deep loss. It helps us just to be able to put one foot in front of the other and not totally disintegrate in our lives. But eventually there comes a time when the shock wears off and we begin to face the reality of what's happened. Whether it's a loss of a loved one or whether it's some debilitating accident. And the worst thing that we can do to someone that has experienced great and deep loss in their life is to think about in terms of you just need to get over it. Just get over it. An experience that someone told me where they lost a child. And this person's boss told him that he could have one day off. One day off after the funeral. And then the next day, be back to work, ready to go. You know, what he's saying is get over it. Just get over it, okay? The child's dead. You buried your child. Now get on with it. Get on with life. Get over it. You know, wouldn't it have been much more healing to say, you know, this is a big loss in your life? You know, realistically, you're going to take a lifetime to heal with this. But I'm going to give you 3-4 days, you know, just to let your soul catch up with your body and then come back to work. And we're not going to expect you to do your best work. This is going to take a lot of time. But begin to show up to work because that's good. But this whole idea of you got to get over it is something I believe that there needs to be a change. Just like changing the scorecard in the life of the church, we need to change the scorecard when it comes to grief and loss. My time is running out this morning. I got a lot more to say, but I'll just wait for the other sermons. But I do want to get to this. Gerald Sitzer. And I'm going to close with his words and then just a few quick principles. Gerald Sitzer, who maybe some might remember, he was chaplain at Northwestern College many years ago. After he left Northwestern College, he moved to the state of Washington. And he worked in a college there. And while he was there, his family was involved in a massive accident. And in one car accident, his mother, his wife, and one of his daughters were killed. And in that whole process, years later, he wrote a book about that experience, and the book is entitled A Grace Disguised. And he talks about how to go through this, and this is where I get this idea of it's not encouraging somebody to get over it, but it's encouraging people to absorb it into their heart and soul. In fact, in one place he says, I learned that the quickest way to reach the sun and the light of day is not to run west chasing after it. But he said, I learned to head east into the darkness until I finally reached the sunrise. In other words, he faced that grief and loss head on. He went into the darkness. And eventually there was the sunrise. But he also writes, and this is what I really wanted to emphasize. And I'm just going to read his words because I think they're so powerful. He says, catastrophic loss, by definition, precludes recovery. It will transform us or destroy us, but it will never leave us the same. There is no going back to the past. It is not therefore true that we become less through loss, unless we allow the loss to make us less, grinding our soul down until there's nothing left. Loss can also make us more, he said. I did not get over the loss of my loved ones. Rather, I absorbed the loss into my life until it became a part of who I am. Sorrow took up permanent residence in my soul and enlarged it. One learns the pain of others by suffering one's own pain, by turning inside oneself, by finding one's own soul. However painful, sorrow is good for the soul. The soul, he says, is elastic, like a balloon. It can grow larger through suffering. It can grow larger through suffering. We can become big-souled people. So in mature spirituality, just in closing, the principles, loss is real. It's a part of all of our lives. Limits are behind all loss. And really, Job's story is our story. And healing comes when we turn toward our pain. We go into the darkness in God's grace. And we're going to look at a lot about that, what it means in the weeks ahead. And loss can make us more. It can enlarge our souls. Don't try to get over it. Let it come in and enlarge our souls, that we become more compassionate, merciful people.